Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Tunnel Vision, a show brought to you by USCFootball.com. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined by Ryan Abraham and virtually by Shotgun Spratling. We have a fun show for you guys today. We have a lot to talk about, a lot to cover. I believe our last show was a month ago, Ryan, with Brandon Sosna.
Brandon's sitting right here.
Yeah, and now here we are a month later. Shotty is officially an East Coaster. Some crazy developments. Shotgun, yeah. You don't look too happy about that.
It's cold here. You see, I got a jacket on. I got a long sleeve shirt underneath. I don't like the cold, and it's cold all the time up here. I don't appreciate it.
Oh, so it's cold, Shotty, is what you're saying.
I think it's cold.
It's cold. Okay. Yeah. And the transfer portal has just been revolving a lot.
Transfer-palooza is what I call it. You like that?
It's a great
is
way.
Is that a hashtag that's going to trend?
It's a good dub. So we'll talk about that. We have a graphic. I'll put it up right now. We have just so much to talk about if you look at the players who've transferred in to USC and transferred out. So we have a lot to talk about. Jackson Dart entered the portal as well. It feels like there's just been a whole lifetime of news in between our tunnel visions, Ryan. So we have a lot to cover.
There's been a lot. The guy that was sitting right next to me, Brandon Sosna, you know, a month ago, it was great to get him on talking about the Lincoln Riley hire. He goes and hires you away. So, like, I feel like I just got stabbed in the back. I feel like, you know, Bob Bowlsley, the Big 12, just like the Texas and Oklahoma just left for the SEC. No, I'm just kidding. But we got Keeley's last live show with us.
Yes, today's my last live show. Super surreal. I announced earlier today I am leaving USCFootball.com, which is crazy. After seven years starting as an intern, I'm going to be USC's director of creative content and team reporter for the athletic department, which is crazy. So last show for me, which is pretty crazy.
But we're very happy for Keely. Like she said, like she, you know, started off as a freshman. What did you have, like 30 Twitter followers or something?
I had 30 Twitter followers, and this man slid into my DMs and was like, hey, do you want to intern? So I what I do remember is that you were like, we'll have a trial period to see if you'll be our intern, and then I'll let you know if you're our intern. And you never got back to me, Ryan, so
that's
I just wanted to know
ago.
If I can be your intern or like what's the status there.
Yeah, you're in 7 years.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay. good to know. Just wanted to double check.
Yeah, it's funny. And for all those like people that want to do this kind of stuff out there, Keely was just good. She didn't have a lot of followers, but she was really knowledgeable on Twitter. She was engaged. She knew what was going on with the team. We see a lot of people like, oh, I really want to cover the team, and they tweet about whatever, crocheting or something, like nothing else. Like just she was really into covering the team. Like, oh, like in whatever, saw some hashtags and stuff. Right, someone might have pointed you out to, I forget what it was, but
I quote tweeted you. Jabari Ruffin tore his ACL, and I quote tweeted you.
Oh,
like,
okay.
It wasn't a quote tweet back then, but it was like a RT or whatever.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
And
yeah,
I was like, cool. Yeah.
Yeah,
so, but we're super happy to see Keely. How many followers do you have now?
14,000 in there. Around
so from
there.
30 to 14,000.
Yeah,
that's
a
pretty good.
Good amount,
but
I think.
It's because she's put in a ton of work and just has been an excellent reporter for us. She's the first intern I ever hired to be a full time employee. So that's been it's been great to see her. Just kind of, you know, I've seen you grow up basically, which is crazy.
I know, which is, it's just crazy. That's what I wrote on the P. I'm like, everyone's kind of watched me. I was 19 when I started, probably, 19, and now I'm 26, which is crazy. So thanks to everyone who watched and watched me grow. And I mean, I said it already, but I'm so thankful for all you guys. And Shotty, you're my big brother who I've always fought with from the beginning. But yeah, we can get into this later. We have a lot of USC news.
Yeah,
to talk
we can
about.
Get into all that stuff.
Now, I was saying before the show, this is, we always call this therapy. Usually after games, we call this therapy for USC fans. I think I need to bring that back just because I feel like everyone is now like tortured by the fight on emoji on Twitter. It's been a campaign for USC that's been working well because anytime they drop just one tweet of that emoji, everyone's on alert. And so we've now seen two of those today. And now Lincoln Riley joined the madness. What are you guys determining from that?
Yeah, Lincoln Riley, the last time he tweeted the fight on emoji was December 11th. So I went back and looked through his timeline, and that was like 2 days before Damani Jackson, the five-star, you know, cornerback from Modern Day, you know, recommitted. So maybe that was what he was talking about. It's hard to say. But I don't know. Like, for him to come out there, and we're seeing, like, Gavin Morris talking about the big one, but this is the second time he said this is the big one. And I think for USC fans, it's great when you pick up like a linebacker from Auburn or something like that, but it's not Caleb Williams, and that's who everyone wants to know about. So I'm not sure what USC is doing, what the end game is here, but the constant emojis and then even making comments about how these are big ones, unless it's Caleb Williams or, like, you know, I don't know, somebody that's bigger than that, I don't think USC fans, they're sort of numb to it. You know, you remember like when the Pete Carroll era, USC just sort of like going to Rose Bowl after Rose Bowl, you're sort of like, it's the Rose Bowl again. You're picking up really good players in the transfer portal, but unless it's going to be Caleb Williams, I don't think, they're just sort of like, yeah, okay, tell me about Caleb Williams. But we'll talk about all the transfers and stuff that the guys are coming in. But the emoji watch, you got to follow everyone, like, follow Shotgun. He's got some good analysis. But Chris Trevino has been killing it.
Chris has just made this. He's gone full Trevino, which I love. Like, this is the personality we get to see, and now he's finally putting it out onto the internet. But it's been amazing just to see his reaction because he's, like, antagonizing a Twitter account now. So I just think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Shoddy, your thoughts?
Chris is being hilarious with it. We're seeing, you know, he's come out of his shell more and more, and now he's fully has to come out now that Keeley is leaving and I'm not around physically. So I think that's forcing his hand a little bit more. And you're just seeing the true Trevino that we see all the time, just being hilarious. And the fact that he's, you know, kind of waging war with this Twitter account and, you know, just, you know, how he's been so upset with some of these, some of the tweets that have been coming out. I'm taking a completely different track. You know, I've been, you know, putting out sound effects from different scary movies, horror movies. So just different ways to go about it. Everyone is kind of seeing all the emojis and going, is it Caleb Williams? Is it this person? Is this person? Is it a linebacker? Is it a running back? And USC, the crazy thing is I know a lot of USC fans are getting a little bit upset because they're getting their hopes up so much for it to be Caleb Williams, but every one of these guys they're bringing in are dudes. And that's the part where I kind of wish Caleb Williams, if he does end up coming to USC, would have already been done so people could be celebrating the players they're getting, the Troy Dyes, the Austin Jones, the guys that are coming in, because they're getting some really quality guys and you're getting different classes. I think they're doing a great job so far of building that roster with different classes, not just saying, hey, we need to bring in a bunch of talent and it being all fifth-year guys. They're going to be gone next year, and suddenly you got to do it again. But getting in guys that are, you know, they got 3 years of eligibility left, 2 years of eligibility, only have 1 year, and just filling in the roster in different ways like that. And they have really attacked positions of need. All the positions that they brought in so far are ones where they needed to add depth. Now, obviously, with Jackson Dart in the transfer portal, the quarterback position needs to add somebody as well. Whether that's Caleb Williams, whether that's a JT Daniels, whether that's Jackson Dart coming back, they have to get another quarterback in this class. So it's going to be interesting to see if Caleb Williams does end up being the guy and what exactly happens there with that quarterback position.
So let's go back to Jackson Dart entering the transfer portal. Ryan, I know you and I had a podcast about it, and we basically said Jackson Dart entering the transfer portal it's not a direct reflection on where Caleb Williams is in his decision. And I think that's played out correct, given that we still don't know where Caleb Williams is going right now.
Yeah, people assumed that was going to be, you know, he's going in, it's because Caleb Williams is coming in. It's one of those things where I do believe, and, you know, we don't get to talk to Lincoln Riley about this. If Lincoln Riley had his pick, he would have liked to keep someone like Jackson Dart on the roster. Like right now, like Shotgun mentioned, I mean, you have Miller Moss and you have Mohassan, the transfer from Vanderbilt, who was a walk-on at giving a scholarship. That's all there is. So obviously you need a quarterback. They got Malachi Nelson for the 2023 class. But you know, bringing in somebody now is going to be imperative. You need, you know, there's a lot of great players that they brought in, but you need a quarterback to make things run. It could be, you know, Miller, Mostert, Mohsen, but you're going to need depth anyway. So you're going to bring in some sort of transfer there. But when, you know, I think there's a lot of players that you can see, and if Keeley wants to put that list up again, yep. The 16 players that have transferred out, there's players that probably weren't going to play much. There's players that Lincoln Riley and his staff have evaluated that were just like, you know, you have the conversation like, hey, you're probably not going to play. You know, it might be better for you to enter the portal, whatever that conversation's like. There's guys doing that. I don't believe that would be the case with Jackson Dart. I think that's someone they would like to keep around. But, you know, quarterback position is unique. You know, there's only one that plays, and you want the situation to be right. So when we saw Keaton Slovis, you know, enter the transfer portal, I thought there was a real possibility he sort of waited to see where Graham Harrell ended up. Now, Graham Harrell ends up going to West Virginia, and Keaton Slovis had already committed to Pitt there. I don't think that same relationship like that Slovis and Harrell had was the same sort of thing with Dart and Harrell. So I don't think you're going to see Dart go to West Virginia. We talked about this probably a couple weeks ago in the war room. It'll be interesting to see sort of where he ends up. You know, he's talked to Ole Miss, Oklahoma. There's some places he could land. But I don't think there was a direct correlation. I still think USC is the leader in the clubhouse to land Caleb Williams, but he's someone that's going to take his time and check out all the opportunities. There's NIL deals. There's all kinds of stuff that are kind of going on behind the scenes. So this is definitely the one to watch. I know there's people are coming out and people have tweeted that it's a done deal. We've been saying, if you read the war room and stuff, that's just like, that's not what we're hearing. Like, it's not like it's not going to happen for USC, but we just haven't heard it's a done deal. But every time you see one of those emojis, it's like fight on emoji. You think it's going to be happening, but obviously that it hasn't happened yet. So we're waiting just like everyone else. And the last day to register for classes, I believe, is January 28th for USC. So you would like the situation for him to be able to come in and, you know, participate in spring football, but he's not going to be able to be a student unless he comes in before at USC before January 28th. There's other, you know, schools on the quarter system where you can kind of delay it till March. So that's going to be interesting to watch. If there's one quarterback that would, you know, that you would be okay with not taking part in spring football to learn Lincoln Riley's system, would be Caleb Williams, because he's already been in Lincoln Riley's system, but still you would love to be able to bring him in and participate in spring ball. So we think it's going to be over the next 4 or 5 days, but who knows?
Yeah.
And with that, you want to get him in for spring ball. Caleb Williams wants to get in as well, because you got to establish that rapport with your receivers. You saw that at the beginning of this year, how USC struggled with, you know, so many changes that they had with Keaton Slovis going through the offseason progression, how it took a little bit of time, and that really hurt USC early in the season. I think you want to get, you know, your quarterback that's going to be there, you want to get him in. He needs to be practicing for spring ball. And Caleb Williams, you know, he wants to be three and out. He wants, it's all about, you know, the NFL progression, who's going to get him ready for the NFL. So he wants to get in at spring two. So that's why it's so important that, you know, a student is enrolled at USC by the 28th, so that they are eligible to participate in spring ball rather than having to wait until the summer and then start working with the summer workouts.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know USC fans don't want to think about this, but Shotgun, is there a scenario where USC ends up without Jackson Dart and without Caleb Williams? And what does that scenario look like going forward?
Yeah, that's the scary proposition for USC. Now, looking at what they've done so far in the transfer portal, I think that USC has option B, option C, and is prepared if that does go down. I think, you know, Caleb Williams is probably still option number one for them. If that doesn't happen, I'm sure they would try to get Jackson Dart back. If that doesn't happen, JT Daniels is a guy that I would definitely be looking at. I mean, you know, could USC get a reunited there? That's something that will be interesting to see. But if that doesn't happen, I think you'll start looking at some of the different options. But you also still have Miller Moss. Now, Miller Moss knows that, you know, whoever comes in, whether, you know, it's Jackson Dart or it's coming in, as long as it's not Caleb Williams, he's going to be in a competition with them. If Caleb Williams comes in, Caleb Williams is going to get the job. It's not going to be a competition as much as anybody wants to talk about. Yeah, this is what it will be. That's not the case. He's got an extra year of experience in it. He's already practiced in Lincoln Riley's system. He knows a lot more. He's a little bit more advanced in the system there. And it's Lincoln Riley's guy that he's bringing in. You know, if you're bringing in your guy, that's the guy you're bringing in to start. You're not bringing him in to compete. And Caleb Williams is too good to come in and say, hey, we want you to come in and we want you to compete. No, they're promising him the starting job. He's going to come in and he'll be the starter.
So we have solved the mystery, or at least USC's Twitter account has solved the mystery as to what the second Fidon emoji was in reference to. I believe, since they just announced it, Shane Lee, the Alabama transfer, he's an inside linebacker, 6 foot, 243, according to 247. He went to Alabama in 2019. Guys, I know this is just breaking right now. Initial thoughts. Obviously, USC needs to bolster its inside linebacker depth. What do you take from this transfer?
Yeah, I got a text earlier today about this, I was told it was 60-40 that he would end up coming to USC. We didn't think that the fight on emoji was for him, but maybe it was the second one, and the first one was for somebody else. I just don't know. But I was told, the edge rusher earlier today, but he's more of a thumper, someone that could come in and just, put a body on somebody and help stop the run. So I think that's something that USC needs, just some of the size. I think that, if you look at the roster, I think you come in and look at it and it's like, there's some guys that, have some speed, but maybe they want a little bit more size. And he's someone I think that can come in and do that. If you read the peristyle, hopefully you're a member of uscfootball.com, the VIP membership. Gerard Martinez has been posting some great updates on the peristyle, which is the premium message board. If you haven't signed up, it's $1. So just sign up for a month or $1 and go check it out. He posted about Lee a little earlier today. So I did some research, got some texts on his potential status. We didn't hear it was a done deal. Obviously it is now. So coming in, Shane Lee coming in through the transfer portal. But yeah, just kind of a thumper dude in the middle. So we'll see how he's able to help. USC's not had great production from the inside linebackers. I think he's someone that can come in and help that position.
Thumper dude. Shoddy, any thoughts?
Now, Shane Lee comes in, and, I haven't researched a ton on him, but what I do know from him is he started as a true freshman at Alabama.
Is that good?
He started the entire season at Alabama. Now, they did have some injuries. You remember Dylan Moses, their star linebacker, had the ACL injury before the season. But he comes in and starts the entire time. He rotated in some last year, didn't play a lot in 2020. And this year he was he had an injury. I think it was a back injury. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head. He only played a couple of games. So the big thing is getting him healthy. But a guy that started as a true freshman in Alabama, now his numbers, I just looked up his PFF numbers, and they're not great from that year. But that tells you that he has a ton of talent and that he's a guy that can potentially continue to progress. He's going to have multiple years of eligibility for USC. The 2020 season doesn't count against anyone because of the COVID year. And then this year he only played in 3 games, so he's going to get a redshirt year there. So he will have, I believe, 3 years of eligibility remaining, just off the top of my head, looking at this real quick. So another guy that you can come in, and if he's not a starter right away, he's going to be in that mix at least and should be in the rotation. And from what we've heard about Alex Grinch's defense, he likes to rotate his players a little bit more. So that's an opportunity for him to get in there. Rajon Davis, Julian Simons, some of those guys. And we'll see where Shane Lee continues to grow. But like you said, a 6 foot, 240-pound guy, a guy that can bring the thump, can also attack the passer as well and get some pressure on the quarterback. So another, going to the SEC and getting two linebackers today, again, USC has been searching the entire country and has been pulling some big time or some guys from big time programs. So, hopefully for USC, they get more production out of Shane Lee than they did out of Ishmael Stopshire, their last transfer from Alabama.
Yeah, and speaking of, he entered the transfer portal this past week. But overall, Shoddy, what are you thinking about USC's inside linebacker depth with these additions? And who's left?
They still need to add some more guys because you got to span the classes because you're losing Kanai Mauga. Now you got Raylan Goforth back. Is he ready to step in and be a guy and be able to produce consistently for you? They have to tackle better, though. And that's one of the things you expect from Shane Lee coming in from Alabama. Alabama usually is really good at tackling and really teaches it pretty well. So that's something that you're going to look for from him. You got to get those young guys ready. You need Rajon Davis and Julian Simon, I think, to be in the mix this year, to be contributors, and if not, take over one of those starting positions.
Yeah. A little shout out to our boy Seth, new intern, who's been doing some awesome works on the graphics. So I just tweeted out a graphic of Lee, the transferring to USC. So
this graphic as well.
Yeah, he did that one too. The one that shows up. So it's not up to date right now because we just
it's already out of
during
out
the show.
Yeah,
Seth, why don't you give us a new graphic already?
That's how quick this has been rolling for USC. This is their sixth transfer edition this week alone. And they're 12th overall. They have the number two class before this commitment. I'm not sure exactly where Shane Lee is ranked to where if they will bump above LSU, but the number two transfer class in the nation and USC's overall class for 2022. Remember, before early signing period, before the early signing period started, USC was number 103, I believe it was. They were past 100. There are 130 teams. There's 130 teams, and USC was over 100. They're in the bottom 30 in the country, and now they're all the way up to number 13 leading into this commitment. And now, obviously, a little bit of adjustment with the numbers. We have now included at 24/7 Sports, we have included the transfers and added them into the classes because it has changed completely with the 24/7 sports portal. I can't get it out. The transfer portal has changed everything. So we have included that now. So it's not just the incoming high schoolers. It's also the incoming transfers. And they're weighted based on how much eligibility they have left as well as their talent. So all those things are factored in. And USC has risen from past 100 to now up into the top 15. An incredible run for USC, and it's because they've been getting some big-time players like some of the guys that we've seen today, but also some of the guys we've seen earlier in the week. Jerry Rice's son, two Pac-12 starting running backs, and two defensive backs that have a lot of potential as well.
Yeah, go for it, Ryan.
So with the whole I coined the phrase, whatever, or talked about transfer-palooza for USC, and it's been – pretty crazy with 16 guys transferring out. You had 9 guys go off to the NFL. There was 6 or 7 that that exhausted their eligibility. When Lincoln Riley, we talked to him after the early signing period, said, 35 players or more, you could have a turnover on this roster. And it seemed like a lot. But what you are seeing now, now that the transfer portal is as important in college football as anything, and the NCAA allowing student athletes to transfer one time without any sort of penalty, this is essentially free agency in college football. And when we would see a new head coach come in, it was going to take a while for that roster to be reworked. It was going to take a couple of recruiting classes to bring in the right kind of players to fit the system that the new head coach would want and really kind of show the results on the field. It'll be really interesting to see what Lincoln Riley can do in his first year, especially if he gets a quarterback like Caleb Williams. The players he's bringing in, he's upgraded the roster in the offseason in a time when you really wouldn't be able to. Yeah, you could bring in high school freshmen, and some of those guys can be impactful, but usually it takes a little while. You could bring in junior college transfers. Now you're bringing in full-on guys that are like all Pac-12 level, like, oh, let's go get the best running back from this team or the best receiver from that team. Not only just bringing them in, but bringing them in from your rivals to be able to do things like that, to bring in some quality players from the SEC or the Big 12. It's just a really interesting time in college football. And it just shows like what USC was able to do. You bring in a guy like Lincoln Riley for a reason. And he's able to bring in not just, the 2023 class is going to be great, but he can bring in a class right now of cherry picking guys from other programs and from the transfer portal that really just transforms the roster essentially overnight. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. If you can keep up on the site on our scholarship distribution chart, every time they sign someone new, and like Shotgun said, 6 this week alone, you add them in and you look at the way the roster's getting massaged. It's very heavy on the freshmen, especially the sophomores, because of that 2020 class that essentially joined with the 2021 class when no eligibility was lost during that 2020 season. But they're adding some veterans as well, like Shotgun talked about. It's really interesting to see this whole transfer palooza how it's going on, and it doesn't seem like it's over anytime soon. But the way he's going to be able to massage this roster, you're like, oh, you need a little of this, you need a little of that. Oh, you got some of this, got some of that. They've added one offensive lineman. They might add a couple more. We'll see. But they kept some veteran guys on the offensive line. Maybe you don't need as much help there. But this is really uncharted territory as far as reworking a roster in the first offseason before he's even coached the game.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you guys, because Lincoln Riley kind of gave us a preview of what he was going to do going forward in his introductory press conference. He said he's going to turn over the roster. And I think when you first saw that exodus into the transfer portal, at least in my mentions, a lot of USC fans were like, what's happening? Why is everyone leaving? Why would they leave Lincoln Riley? But then you see these transfers coming in. Do you feel like they plugged the holes where we saw gaps in USC's roster?
Do you want to start, Shotgun?
I feel like they've plugged most of the holes. They're doing a good job of attacking areas of need. You know, they're not going out and getting a bunch of safeties. Safeties, USC's loaded with safeties. Now, that's even including the fact that they lost a couple of veterans to the transfer portal, to the draft, and Greg Johnson and Chase Williams. Still, Isaiah Pulmao still up in the air. I haven't really heard anything on that one. But they have a ton of young safeties there. Now, do they bring – maybe they bring in a grad transfer there, but they're attacking the areas where they've had limited depth, where they just haven't had production. I mean, wide receivers, they've got some bodies there, but they didn't have the production outside of Drake London last year. So they went out and got some more guys, got some explosive guys, got a big guy in Brendan Rice. So I think they've really done a good job of that. I think Lee does that as well. Just looking up some more stuff on him. Freshman All-American, so that's usually pretty good. Finished with 86 tackles as a freshman, the most of any SEC freshman that year. So, you know, he's a guy that's going to be able to get to the ball and create some tackles. And if he can wrap up and doesn't miss a lot of tackles, which that I don't know necessarily about him, that's something that USC has missed from their linebackers the last couple of years.
Ryan, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is I think they're getting there as far as filling some of the holes. And I feel like Lincoln Riley wants, you know, there's certain body types, there's, you know, to fit the positions, you know, Alex Grinch's defense and what he wants on offense. And I feel like that's, you're getting an inkling of what he's looking for really from some of the players he's, you know, brought out of the transfer portal. When you hear a guy visiting, I think they've had a pretty good hit rate of guys that are veteran players or, you know, experienced players from somewhere else visiting, taking an official visit to USC and boom, like signing. You know, soon after that. That's why you see all those fight on emojis. So it seems like he is on track to, you know, on the way to building the roster the way he wants. Every day, I mean, just adding a couple of guys from the SEC, I guess both were today, right? I don't know, the days were all kind of mixing up. Yeah. You get an Auburn guy, Alabama. It's weird you see a tweet, you're like, oh, Georgia wide receiver transfers to Alabama. Like, those two teams just play the national championship, and you got a receiver going from one team to the other. I mean,
former USC target.
So. Yeah, it's like crazy.
And all because of SoCal. That transfer is because he wants to go play with Bryce Young, who he played for, I believe, on the premium team when they were both out here at Southern California, modern day in Calabasas.
So there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on. Sometimes it's a player coming home, like, you know, Jermaine Dye coming back from Oregon to USC. But there's, you know, just fitting in the system, getting excited. This is the kind of excitement Lincoln Riley's created. You know, we know, we just see our numbers on shows like this. It's gone up exponentially with the hire of Lincoln Riley. Well, it's created buzz in the college football world, too, before he's even played a game. And if you can build that up, I think getting your first year to maybe be like, you're a 4-8 team in 2021, people are like, oh, 7-5 is a big improvement. The way he's changing the roster, like, that's not going to be what the – I mean, the goal is going to be to win the Pac-12, I think, in the first year, which maybe when he was first hired, you're like, yeah, that's a big stretch. Like, Utah's good. Oregon's good. I mean, the way he's building up the roster, if they get a guy like Caleb Williams, they're going to at least be the co-favorites in the South with Utah, who brings a lot of guys back, and obviously they develop those players. It's a really good team. But he's shooting for, you know, winning the Pac-12, just the guys he's adding right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some serious deficiencies on the roster when Lincoln Riley took over. Now, part of that is the guys that were leaving and some guys that we knew were going to go to the draft, some guys that we knew were going to go to the transfer portal. Hey, you're just going to have some depth issues. They needed playmakers, though. That 2020 class didn't have playmakers in it. Gary Bryant Jr. has done a couple nice things, but they needed some guys to come in. You get a guy like Mario Williams, you expect him to come in and be a playmaker. Troy Dye, not Jermaine Dye, Ryan. That's the former baseball player,
sorry,
former Atlanta Brave, Oakland A.
Travis Dye.
Troy or Travis?
Travis. I can't remember. Troy's his brother.
Troy, I know they're brothers. I get them mixed up. I apologize.
I mixed it up too. And then you mixed up my, you know, fixing my mix up, which is great. It's
great. So you bring in Dye, who's a guy that can catch the ball in the backfield. That's what I really noticed out of the two guys that they got. Both him and Austin Jones are going to be guys that they can use in different ways. Similar with Relique Brown. Hey, Relique Brown, we're going to use you in the slot. Why don't we bring in two veteran guys that Relique Brown can now learn under? I mean, that I think that's going to be great for his development as well. So you're bringing in playmakers, though. These are guys that can get in the end zone, two starters from the Pac-12 schools. The wide receivers, Brendan Rice, didn't have a quarterback that could throw the ball worth a flip this year and still was putting up some pretty big numbers, was one of the top in the Pac-12, I believe, in yards per reception. So, you know, these are guys that are big-time playmakers. That's what was missing on this roster. Now you start adding. You need defensive line depth. Okay, we'll get a couple of guys. They brought in a couple of guys that are going to help with what Alex Grinch likes to do. Smaller, a little bit smaller, but quicker guys on the defensive line. So you're adding some positions there. Romello Height, you know, I looked at his tape and looking at his stats. I mean, he had a better pass rush win percentage than anybody on the USC roster this year. He got to the quarterback. Now he was a reserve. He was playing, you know, something from 10 to 30 snaps a game, but he was getting to the quarterback pretty successfully. Now didn't get the sacks, and that'll be something he has to develop and go. But, you know, for his first time really playing this year at Auburn, was able to create pressures pretty consistently. So that's something that I think is a big addition for USC as well. When you lose Drake Jackson, you got Hunter Echols and Juliana Falanico both entering the portal. So I think they've done a really good job of attacking some areas of need. I thought that the offensive line would be really a struggle for them, but getting back Andrew Voorhees, when he's a guy that we heard more than likely going to enter his name, going to leave USC, to get him back, I think is really big. And then adding, you know, Brett Nealon coming back, and now you add Hoskins from Virginia as well. There's so many transfers. Yeah. I'm trying to keep up with all the names.
Bobby Hoskins, yeah.
Yeah, so you get him back and add some extra depth there, and now if you need to put him in place at right tackle for Jalen McKenzie, if you want to put him at left tackle and move Andrew Voorhees back in, you just have a lot more options, and that's something there was going to be a big concern on that offensive line, is that you might have five guys that have played, but is there going to be any depth at all? And I think they're still wanting to add a couple pieces to that offensive line as well to bridge that gap from some of those young guys that maybe are coming up.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mention this at the top of the show, but of course, if you have any comments or questions, be sure to put them in wherever you're watching, Facebook, Periscope, or YouTube. If you label them question, that helps us as well, as we're looking for the questions. We love hearing from you guys, so please ask away. And you guys mentioned it, Travis Dye. I think that was a surprise, one, that he entered the portal. I think a lot of people were either expecting him to finish out his Oregon career or just head to the NFL. What does that do for USC's running back room to have a veteran come into that room when you lose a guy like Keonta Ingram, who announced that he's leaving for the NFL, and you lose a guy like Vavai Malapai?
Yeah, I mean, it's you look at the room now. So there's five running backs on scholarship. I'm checking our scholarship distribution chart, but like, Travis Dye definitely brings some experience. You bring in Austin Jones from Stanford, so a junior and a senior in that running back room. And, you know, Raelic Brown, obviously, he's the five-star freshman coming in. We didn't get to see a whole lot of Brandon Campbell. He's the redshirt freshman on the roster. And then Darwin Barlow, I really liked what he brought from TCU. So bringing in a couple veteran guys from the Pac-12, I think that gives you a much stronger running back room for something that, you know, Lincoln Riley to work with. And remember, like, those Oklahoma offenses, they ran the ball really well. So I think he's got some options of different body types that he can use, and some of the veteran leadership coming in. And I don't think any of those guys are going to feel they're behind, because obviously it's going to be a new offensive system running in. But I like the way it's spread out. You got two freshmen, a sophomore, a junior, and a senior. We've seen some kind of lopsided, like, where the guys are on scholarship chart in that running back room. Now it's more distributed evenly, and I think you got some different body types that he can work with.
Mm-hmm. As far as wide receivers go, I know last year USC tried to supplement some depth issues with like a Katie Nixon. What do you see from this crop of transfer portal guys?
So Terrell Bynum from Washington, I mean, he was all Pac-12 honorable mention, I think. But if you look at that, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like there's seven sophomores and then like one freshman, John Jackson the third, he's still out there, a junior, and then Bynum's the one senior there. But like Mario Williams, there's a lot of upside, you know, him being a true sophomore. You know, Brendan Rice, of course, you know, another Pac-12 guy from Colorado. So it's going to look different, you know, but I like the way Taj Washington looked. I mean, Kyle Ford coming back. I think he has some good options in that receiver room. I don't know what you think, Shotgun.
I think that when USC went to Colorado this time, they got a much better addition. Unfortunately, Katie Nixon wasn't able to produce much for USC. I think he had four or five catches. He had a touchdown in the very last pass of USC season, I believe. So just wasn't able to add much there. A guy that I thought would be a little bit more dynamic and be able to do some different things. Now, Taj Washington, obviously, I think that this actually helps him, because now you can move him in the slot more if you want. I think it gives you just some more options there. Terrell Bynum is a guy that can play inside or outside as well. It's interesting to look at the body types that they've went after. You know, Mario Williams, Terrell Bynum, smaller guys, whereas Brendan Rice is a bigger guy on the outside. So we'll see how they kind of use those body types together. They've been able to mix and match a little bit at Oklahoma in the past. If that's something they try to do as well, if you're trying to get a guy like Mario Williams or Malik Brown kind of matched up one-on-one, you know, can you get those guys in the slot and get them against a linebacker or a safety and be able to use your quicks there? Those are things that I'm kind of interested in. I'm really fascinated and intrigued by the offense that Lincoln Riley brings, and I'm excited to study what he ends up doing with the personnel on USC's roster. I think that's going to be really fun when it's been, you know, I think he's going to be more adaptable to the talent on the roster than we've seen in the past with some of the coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. Like, you look at, if you just brought Lincoln Riley in with the current, you know, with the roster that you had at the end of 2021, obviously it's very different right now. You're like, oh, you know, you could probably fit some of these guys in and work with them and still have something that looks good. I mean, it should be a huge head, you know, head start with like being able to change your roster this much. I just don't think anyone realized how this, you know, free agency era, this transfer palooza thing, really could make this big of a difference right away. And it seems like it is. And he's obviously not done. I mean, he talked about, you're essentially recruiting all the way up until August. I mean, there's a kind of a crazy period now trying to get guys into school right now, and you have like another 4 or 5 days. So after, you know, the next 4 or 5 days, it's probably going to slow down more because then, you know, there's still an academic calendar. You still want to be able to get into school, participate in spring football. But we've seen a bunch of transfers after spring football. You may remember Jay Toya like blows up during spring football at USC and then transfers to UCLA. So there's going to be a whole nother period of this after spring ball, but at least he's getting the roster to a point where, okay, it's going to look a lot closer to what he wants than what it was just a couple of months ago. You see what you have in spring ball, and then you can kind of make some changes there. Like, oh, you know, we still need a couple pieces in this position, that position, whatever it is. Plus, you still might, you know, lose a couple guys. So right now, my count, I think it's up to 78 players. Let me see real quick. I think it's 78 players on the scholarship distribution chart. You know, and, you know, that's including all the defections for the NFL and the guys transferred in, transferred out. So we'll see. They still got some wiggle room there, some guys to play with. There's probably gonna be some more guys leaving, but you can, you know, they can add, you know, seven more or so right now. And the new rule this year is you could actually sign more than 25 guys. You can do, you know, you can do up to 32 to replace any transfers. Obviously, USC has a lot of transfers out, so there's a bunch of guys they could replace.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know we've talked about the worst-case scenario, if you will, about USC's quarterback situation. Say they do get Caleb Williams. Do you still want to add more quarterbacks out of the portal? I mean, we've seen seasons where USC's gone through three quarterbacks who've gotten hurt. Would you feel better if you kind of padded that room a little bit?
It could do preferred walk-on, you know, kind of situation where you bring in somebody like we saw with Mo Hassan that's transferring in like that. You know, he's had experience in the SEC. That's probably hard to find, but I think there's still some options there. It might be hard to bring someone in, but if they know they're coming in for depth, it's probably not a bad option. I don't think there's really any option in the 2022 class that, you know, you could bring in as a true freshman. But if you bring in, you know, Caleb Williams, and you still got two guys on the roster, someone else for depth would be great, but it might be on the preferred walk-on side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really tough position to add. You know, quarterbacks, there's only one of them that plays at a time, and usually there's only one of them that plays for a season as long as there's, you know, everyone stays healthy. Chris Hummer had an interesting stats earlier this week. From 2010 to 2019, 63% of 405 stars quarterbacks transfer at least once. And then the last 4 or 5 years here, from 2016 to 2019, we've seen 68% of 4 and 5 star quarterbacks transfer. So it's possible after spring. I think that's when you'll see a couple quarterbacks go in. Hey, I didn't win the starting job. I'm not going to get a chance here. Do I want to enter the transfer portal now? Or, you know, a new offense has come in and you know, I tried it out for the spring, didn't really fit my style. So maybe I go into the transfer portal. Can USC pick up somebody then? It's still going to be really tough because if Caleb Williams actually comes, then you know he's going to be the starter. You're not competing for that spot. You know, it's a little bit different where if USC brings in, even a JT Daniels right now and he's competing with Miller Moss and somebody else says, hey, I think I can get in that mix and I can beat somebody, then maybe you can add an extra person for depth and for competition. But if it's Caleb Williams, I don't think that's the case.
Mm-hmm. We're getting closer to the top of the hour, so I'm going to jump into some questions.
Yeah, that sounds good.
First one is from Bill on Facebook, who, I love this, he put transferpalooza question, so very specific there. He said, which transfer, so far will have the biggest immediate impact next season?
That's a good question. Looking at the list, I mean, I think you're going to look on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, it could be, one of the defensive linemen, Shane Lee, the linebacker. I think someone on defense is where they're going to need the most help. Like, you might see a Travis Dye blow up or Terrell Bynum, someone like that. But I think it's going to be more on the defensive side. I don't know. What do you think, Shotgun? Or Keeley, too?
I mean, the first guy that pops to mind is Bobby Haskins. He's going to come in. He's going to be a starter from day one. So, you know, that's a guy that's going to be on the field for potentially 700, 800 plays next season. I think that's really big. Troy Dye, or Travis Dye, he did it again. I remember Troy having the big game against USC, I think in 2018, when he had the club on his hand, and he was playing against USC there as a linebacker against USC. But Travis is going to come in. He's a guy that gets the end zone. He finds the end zone. I think he had 28 career touchdowns, if I remember correctly off the top of my head. Over 3,000 yards. He's going to come in and provide leadership for that group and also is going to show guys, hey, this is how you pick up that third down. This is how you get in the end zone and get those tough yards. He has that knack for it, and maybe he can lend a little bit of advice to those younger guys and help them along as well. I think Brandon Campbell could have could really take off this year. Same thing with Darwin Barlow if those guys are healthy. And the thing is, running backs, you always need multiple guys because they never stay healthy for an entire season. So you're going to need those guys. On the defensive side, Romello Height, I mean, like I said, looking at his tape and looking at, his ability to get pressure on the quarterback and the fact that there's a big void right there. When Drake Jackson leaves, you got a big hole there to fill, and they just don't have the talent stacked up behind him at that position. Technically on the roster right now, USC only has two outside linebackers. You got Rajon Davis and you got Garrison Madden, the freshman they just signed. Now, Corey Foreman's also going to play on the edge as well, and he's going to fill up one of those spots on the edge, and you'll probably have Thule and Nick Figueroa playing on the edge as well as a defensive end, outside linebacker, and those depending on how Alex Grinch wants to use them. But I think there's a big opportunity for Height to come in and at minimum being on pass rush downs and potentially taking over a starting role as well.
See, I'm going to go with Mario Williams, especially because when you saw once Drake London got hurt, USC's offense had to completely change because they didn't have a reliable wide receiver. Wow. So I just think Mario Williams, you need a guy like that in the wide receiver room. And now, like you said, Ryan, you have a Kyle Ford and other guys in that room, but I just think having that marquee guy is going to elevate the offense overall.
Especially if Caleb Williams comes in. Yes. I think his stock goes way up. If there's no stock neutral there, Keeley, if Caleb comes in too.
Stock neutral.
Just because there's no stock neutral at all.
No, that's false, Shoddy. That's false. Yeah,
no, I'm not giving you anything. Look, I wore a California Angels hat here. That's enough. I'm not giving you any
that's really,
props on stock neutral.
That's really cool of you.
That's really nice. Yeah. Thank you, Shoddy. We had a question from Joseph. Oh, sorry. Go for it, Shoddy.
Really quick on Mario Williams. Obviously, instant impact on the football field, but could potentially play baseball for USC as well.
What's the impact there?
Speed. Just he brings a ton of speed, and if he gets on base, he still bases. USC, they have a couple of really athletic guys right now, and they could, if they add another one, if he it can be eligible for baseball and is able to participate in that, then just adds another weapon for that offense.
Mm-hmm. We got a question from Brian who wanted to know what the latest is on Michael Trigg. That's a guy who we've actually seen in official visit photos with Jackson Dart. What's his status right now?
It doesn't seem like he would be coming back. I know people kind of holding out hope, but it's just one of those things where you want to see what else is out there. And him and Dart were taking some pictures together on some of those visits. I mean, anything can happen. He could eventually end up back at USC. But if I had to bet right now, I think he's going to end up somewhere else. I don't know what you guys think.
Shoddy?
Yeah, pretty much the same. I mean, Jackson Dart, maybe he comes back. Tight ends and quarterbacks a little bit different. If there's an opening for Jackson Dart, if Caleb Williams does not come, maybe that's something where USC reaches out. I think USC would love to have the playmaking ability of Michael Trigg, but with everything that's happened and him going and visiting some of the other schools, it just feels more and more like he's leaning on being closer to home, which is in Florida.
Mm-hmm. We had a question about Josh Connerly, and Ryan, you actually saw him recently in Hawaii. Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you.
It was crazy. How was the Polynesian Bowl?
Poly Bowl was great. It was good. I didn't go 2 years ago, and they didn't have one last year in the pandemic, but I'd gone the couple years before that. So I was there for the week of practice. I didn't get to stay for the game, but there were some big name players that were USC commits. We didn't get that. We were supposed to see CJ Williams, but he wasn't able to make it out. You know, he's at USC now. But seeing the Bishop Gorman kids, Zion Branch and Fabian Ross, I thought they both did well playing in the secondary. But Josh Connerly was the big one. You know, the you know, Rainier Beach five-star offensive tackle, and one of the best players in the country. That's not committed top-rated offensive lineman. Certainly, someone that's you know, on USC's radar, and USC would love to bring in someone like that. That would be a huge boost, not a transfer, just bringing in a five-star freshman offensive lineman. I mean, he's got a good relationship with you know, Lincoln Riley. It seems like there's a good chance for USC in that one. You know, talking to some sources around there, you know, it seems like he'd like to leave the Pacific Northwest, but maybe not go all the way to SEC country. Michigan does seem like the leader right now, but I think USC is right up there. And we'd only get to see him in one practice, and it's unfortunate they weren't having pads in their practices, which they were doing before. They didn't do that this year. There were some issues with jerseys or whatever it was, but we didn't get to see like the full-on offensive linemen thumping each other with defensive linemen one-on-one kind of stuff. We mostly saw footwork drills from him, but talking to a scout that just watched him play in person for the first time, like, yeah, he's the real deal, just body type and all that kind of stuff. There's just not a lot of guys like that on the West Coast, so I think it's a priority for USC. So I don't think USC is the leader in the clubhouse. I think Oregon could come on later in this, but you know, but the guy I talked to that knows the situation pretty well thought it was like a 1-2 thing with Michigan and USC right now. So we'll see where the Trojans end up in this race. But that would be, as far as signing day stuff goes, I mean, USC brought in a couple of five stars already, but bringing in a five-star offensive lineman, you know, kind of that late in the process, I think would be huge for Lincoln Riley.
Mm-hmm. We had a question on YouTube from AKA Boone, who said, who's going to make the biggest long-term impact of the transfers in? I'll put up the chart again, just because everyone needs a refresher.
The first name, again, is Mario Williams, first-year guy. I mean, so he's got 3 years of eligibility. He was just a true freshman this year. Was a freshman All-American for at least one or two publications. And then I think, again, I go back to Romello Height. I think he has a chance to come off the edge and be a legit pass rusher that can be a big impact guy. And you know, if he takes over a starting job. So that's one on offense, one on.
Yeah, I agree with you on those. I think you got to get someone that's coming in that was a freshman this past year. So some of the seniors are not going to be as much of a long-term sort of thing. Like you talk about Haskins, like, yeah, he's going to start at left tackle probably for USC this year, but it'll be for 1 year. So, you know, especially if Caleb Williams comes in, it could be Mario Williams and him for the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
He's possibly going to start at left tackle. Let's not throw that out there just yet. You know, I think that Jonah Monheim and Cortland Ford could take a big jump in their game. And also, if Josh Connerly commits to USC, I wouldn't put it past him coming in and being able to start as a true freshman somewhere on that offensive line. Maybe not a left tackle, maybe that's a right tackle, but I think he would be right in the mix as well.
Interesting. We had a question about, we actually got multiple questions about this, a special teams coordinator. That's not something that was labeled or specifically gone after like we've seen in the Helton era. What are you expecting as far as that?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen during the Pete Carroll era that it was more of a shared responsibility. And I haven't seen if there was one coach that's sort of going to run it. Like, I think Johnny Nansen had done that before when he'd be like coaching running backs or something, but also running special teams, but not a dedicated special teams coach that was hired by the staff. And we saw that, I think, more when there was only 9 assistant coaches. Now that you're allowed 10, it seemed like people would bring in you know, a special teams coordinator, but you know, that's not what Lincoln Riley's doing. So I'm not sure how that's going to be distributed. We'll see probably more when spring football starts, but yeah, no dedicated special teams coordinator this time.
Shadi, I know.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I know you've tracked special teams for years now. I feel like you're the one to ask about this.
I just thought it was interesting that the Packers only wanted to put 10 guys out there for that final field goal. no, I think that it was very interesting when they announced all the coaches. that there was not anyone announced as a special teams coach, which kind of gives you a little bit of pause. Special teams are important. They aren't the most important thing. And if you put up 50 points, they usually aren't the catalyst for determining the win or loss. But when you struggle one game, special teams become that much more important. And so we'll see what exactly they do there and if they decide to give that title to someone down the road as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Packers, I mean, I assume they're going to fire their special teams coordinator, right? Like the, you know, punt block and field goal block or whatever. It's like, ooh, that was bad.
He gone.
He's got to be gone.
We got a question from Big T, who said, do we know the status of Mananoa Tufono? Big on him coming out of high school.
I mean, we haven't seen him in over a year, so my assumption is that similar to Casey Collier, who we saw already enter the transfer portal, who we didn't see around for much of the year this past, or much of the season this past season, I would assume that Mananoa Tufono will be gone. But again, we have not heard anything specific. We have not heard why he was not with the team other than it was a personal reason.
Alrighty. We got a question if we can go more in detail about the two cornerbacks, the one from Colorado and the one from Oklahoma.
All right, so you got Mekhi Blackman is coming in from Colorado. He's a guy that is experienced. He's going to be a six-year guy this year, and he's also went through a lot of things. He went to junior college to begin with. You know, he got to Colorado and had some success early, then had a season-ending injury, has been, you know, nicked up in multiple seasons. So I think the experience that he has is going to be great to be able to teach to those younger guys. And I wrote a little bit about that, talked with him about how he's coming in and, you know, talking to him. He wasn't too worried about the playing time. He says, I know who I am. I know what my abilities are. So I'm not worried about that part. He said, I'm coming in to be able to help the younger guys. And I think that's critical. I think that's a great potential pickup for USC there. And depending on what he can give you on the field, if he gives you a ton, that's great. But if he's just coaching up those younger guys, I think that's really big for that group as well, because there's not any experience left on that rot at the cornerback spot. You know, you lose your top two guys, your starters, to the draft, but you also lose Jaden Williams, who was the guy that graded out the best from that group and, you know, was the guy that got the most reps as a backup this season. So, you know, you're basically turning over that entire position as far as anybody with experience. So him coming in, I think, will be really, really big. And then Latrell McCutcheon, the Oklahoma transfer, you know, got a good amount of playing time this year and outside of the Texas game, he struggled in the Texas game, gave up a couple of big plays in that game. Outside of that, he's pretty locked down. So I think that's a big addition as well, because he's a guy that can continue to grow in this defense and could, you know, be a potential starter from day one for USC. So you get Blackman in there and he can provide some experience. And he's also played last season in the slot almost as much as he played on the outside. So he can play inside or outside. So it gives you some options as well. But just adding his depth, adding his experience and some extra depth to that locker room, and that position group, I think is really big.
And just a guy like Blackman, I mean, when you're talking about guys that were, I mean, he was a captain on the Colorado team, you know, so like things like that, you're like, okay, these are quality players that are being added. Now, sometimes they might be limited for injuries. I think he only played 9 games in 2021, but that's it's a higher level of player that's being added. So, you know, it's hard to bring in all these different pieces and try to make it fit. That's going to be up to the coaching staff, and that's going to be their job. But you look at the players as individuals and it looks like, okay, you can see the reason why behind each one of these guys, why they were brought in.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten multiple questions about Brandon Peely and his health status. If you remember, I believe in spring he tore his Achilles. So obviously was out for the 2021 season. What are you expecting for him going forward, and how important is he to that position group?
I haven't heard any update on his. That's obviously a tough one to bounce back from as far as injuries go. It's, you know, one of the longer ones for rehab wise. But and we thought, even, you know, going into 2020, he was just going to be a super important part of this defense and adding the size. We saw that they just kind of lacked that size at that position. I think they're going to, you know, try to fill that out with the transfer portal. But if he's able to come back and be healthy, I think he's someone that would fit well in Alex Grinch's system. So we'll have to see, but hopefully he's going to be recovered at that point.
we have seen him in some of the videos and stuff that USC has been posting. We've seen him in the background. He's been doing some of the workouts as far as the, you know, the weightlifting. Not sure if he's been able to be on the field and be cleared there to be able to run and, you know, be able to sprint on that torn Achilles. But I think that's a positive sign, because we just didn't see him around the team very often. We did see him at the games, and that was about it. But for him to be back out and be able to do some of the workouts, I think that's a positive sign for USC. And he brings, not only does he bring size, and you can use him as a run stuffer, you know, as a true, you know, true nose, right, head up on the center, but he's also experienced. He has plenty of experience. He's played for 3 seasons. He was expected to be that guy last year, and USC really missed that guy last year with him being out and then Ishmael Sopcich never being, you know, being able to be healthy. So they really missed a true zero tech nose tackle there. Now, in Alex Grinch's system, he likes to use smaller guys that are quicker. But I think he can still utilize a guy like Brandon Peely and use him in different ways. And your best coaches will adapt to their talent rather than trying to make their talent adapt to their scheme. So we'll see how he tries to use them. But he is around and he is doing some of the workouts. So I think that's a good sign for USC right now.
Yeah, that Kansas State transfer, Tyrone Tolini, he's more of that. Like, I think he's 235, something like that. So he's a little bit smaller. So maybe that he'll fit that system better. But like you said, Shotgun, you know, you could use a guy like that. You could always use a run stuffer, someone that's going to take up some space in the middle.
Mm-hmm. We got a question from John on YouTube this time. He said, how do you guys think spring football will look under Lincoln Riley compared to the Helton era? And I'm going to add on to that. I remember I put in the war room a couple months ago, Riley started USC's workouts, winter workouts in January under Clay Helton. They started in February. So we're already seeing those videos come out of the early morning workouts. I know Chris Trevino loves playing CSI Peristyle and trying to understand what we can grab from those videos. First off, anything stand out about those videos? Then we can get into John's question.
Just from talking to some of the talking to some of the players and just seeing what they're. I mean, it looks like they're working hard again. And, you know, every time a new strength staff and stuff comes in, it's always the greatest. It's, you know, cool or whatever. It just I liked what you know, Bobby Steiner had brought. You know, we were hearing some positive things. Just the results didn't seem all that well, and you know, what we're hearing now is just like, okay, these are serious workouts. They're not like the full just how much can you bench like Aaron Osmus, but there's functional strength stuff going on. But they seem to be pretty difficult that the players are kind of going through. So I think that's a positive sign. I don't know if they start spring practice a little earlier because they started the workouts earlier, or we just don't know at this point. It's what we're going to see from Lincoln Riley. I think it's going to be huge this spring. I mean, are we even going to be able to allow to watch? Can fans watch? Media? You know, what? You know, how is it going to be structured? We've seen the same structure where it's like 3 a week. You know, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday for, you know, as long as Keeley's been here and as long as I can remember. Yeah. Does that change? Some coaches want to get it done in a month. Sometimes they spread it out over two. So we just don't know at this point. They haven't announced, but you know, we're waiting on that one because it's definitely going to be something we're going to have to watch.
Mm-hmm. Shoddy?
Yeah, I think the things that I noticed from the videos is seeing guys like Terrell Bynum are already on campus, so a couple of the transfers are already there. The thing with spring, I think with the workouts starting earlier, the things I've heard about the workouts is that they're much longer, that they're, you know, they're hour and a half workouts when before, and this was probably the biggest difference that I was told was, you know, with Bobby Steiner's workouts, it was more you're on the clock, you're running from exercise to exercise. It's a cardio workout at the same time where you're getting your reps in as well. Whereas this is kind of more old school. It's, you know, power lifts. You're still doing those functional strength like Ryan talked about, but it's a longer workout. You know, you're getting some max, you know, some 3 sets of 15 style of reps in there and sets. So I think that you're going to see it's going to be different. And the players have already said that it's different, but you know, like Ryan always says, we can't really identify the strength and training, the positives and negatives, because that's not something we can go see. We don't get the workouts kind of get it handed to us to say, oh, what are they doing this day or this day? It's just we have to wait and see on the results of the players' bodies that we see physically, what they tell us. And then on Saturdays in the fall, you know, how are they stacking up, particularly in the trenches?
Mm-hmm. Joseph wanted to know, what are realistic expectations for Lincoln Riley in year one?
I mean, I think they've been raised already. I think competing for the Pac-12 South is something that's going to be a reality, especially if they bring in the right quarterback. You know, that could be a limitation if they aren't able to get someone that, you know, is experienced or, you know, like a Caleb Williams. But yeah, I feel like the way he's turning over the roster and they're not done, I think by the time we get to the season, you're going to look at this team and go, yeah, it's going to be so much better coach than it was before. The roster is way better. Yeah, there's no reason they shouldn't be able to compete for the Pac-12 South or you know, win the Pac-12. So I think they're trending in that direction. Is that realistic? I don't know. For the first year head coach to take over, we just haven't seen roster turnover like this before. But you can turn over the roster that fast. I know you got to learn the system and all that. I think that's what the expectations are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely think the expectations have been raised just because, you know, I thought that there were some areas, there are still some deficiencies, and they've done a really good job of attacking those that I didn't think they would be able to do as well, as thorough a job so far in the transfer portal. I mean, obviously, it's a big game changer, the transfer portal, and just the fact, the numbers of how much turnovers have been, where a lot of times it takes a year kind of to weed out, you know, the players that you don't want and be able to bring in the guys that you do want. That's seeming to be done this season. So I think that just raises what I would expect in year two. I think maybe now you expect it in year one, especially when once you get a quarterback and you see where they can go from there.
Mm-hmm. James on Facebook wanted to know, is there an update on Jake Smith? Is he healed and ready to go? Shotgun, I believe we had a very brief conversation with him, I believe at Cal. It was towards the end of the season.
I don't remember. It wasn't a Cal. He wasn't there for that
one.
Oh,
that makes sense.
At a home game. Yeah, he said he was progressing, and the hope for him was to be, and the plan was to be ready for spring ball. And if he's ready to go then you add another speedy weapon for USC on the outside.
Mm-hmm. We got a question if we can highlight Talanoa Hufanga's play yesterday. We were talking about it pre-show.
Yeah, pretty cool. And it was funny. I was talking about the Polynesian Bowl, and I think I tweeted this out where you see, you know, Talanoa is just a great dude. I mean, I covered him when he was in Hawaii, and he's like, you know, he was a communication major. He asked me questions about like my job because he was interested in doing that stuff. And while he was there, I had him interview. It was one of the players. I think it might've been one of those offensive linemen that ended up at Oregon or whatever that USC didn't get, but you know, he was trying to recruit them, but he was like doing interviews on camera. I gave him the mic and he was doing, he did a great job. Just someone that you want to root for and
super nice.
Yeah. Haven't heard that much, you know, the San Francisco 49ers this year, but to be in on that special teams play, to the awareness, he picked it up super smooth, the block punt, you know, as Green Bay was backed up, you know, it was a great play to block the punt. He picks it up and runs it in, and it's one of those things where you're like thinking about the rule, like, wait, can you advance that? What's going on? It's like, nope, touchdown. And I was like, you know, their touchdown, San Francisco didn't have a touchdown to that point, so he scores the touchdown in this game. Great for him. So it was a great moment. You know, USC tweeted it out. Everyone was, you know, the 49ers did. So great for Talanoa.
Mm-hmm. We've reached the top of the hour. So if you have any burning questions, some rapid fire questions, get them in. I'll be sure to read them. We had a question from Joseph who said USC's defense has struggled with pass rush. Do you see that improving under Lincoln Riley?
I mean, you got to get the guys. You got to get some experienced guys. You got to get those elite pass rushers. Can Corey Foreman be healthy and on the field? You know, he was getting to the quarterback at a pretty good rate. He was the USC. He had the best pass rush win percentage, I believe it was, of anybody on USC's team. I think he was at 20.5, his pass rush pressure to his pressure rate, actually, was 20.5. So he's getting there about one every five snaps. Whereas Drake Jackson was, I think, 19.5. Those two were the highest. Romello Height, the kid they just picked up today from Auburn, was at 23.1. So that tells you they got a couple guys that have been able to get to the quarterback in the past. Now, can you take that next step? Can you turn that pressure into a QB hit? Can you turn that pressure into a sack? Can you turn it into the game-changing plays, the sack fumbles and stuff? That'll be the next thing. But you got to add some more pieces. You can't just have two pass rushers. I think Nick Figueroa, if he's back healthy, I think that adds a huge piece for USC. He had the best pass rush win percentage for USC in 2020, but obviously was never healthy this year. So that's another piece. And then we'll see if Tulu Tuipulotu takes another step forward.
Yeah.
He was
yeah.
Mr. Consistency for USC, but that's not his specialty. He's more of being able to hold the ground and do some different things there. He can also get to the quarterback a little bit, but we'll see if he can take another step. He's played for 2 years now. You forget that this is his third. He feels like the oldest veteran on the team right now, him and Nick Figueroa, but Tuli's only been there for 2 years. So going into his third year, can he take another jump? He's been really good from where we saw him senior year to freshman year, and then freshman year to sophomore of taking some jumps. So we'll see what he's got in spring and then in the fall as well.
Mm-hmm. And there's talent acquisition. And USC's been good at that over the years. And there's player development, and USC's lacked there. And I think with a guy like Corey Foreman, some guys come in and they're just ready-made, and they just come and play. Some guys need some help. And it looks like, you know, he wasn't able to get on the field all the time. I think you need a good coaching staff in place to help him along and get him to shine to where that five-star talent is. If they can do that, he's obviously going to be a great pass rusher for USC.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget, he missed a complete season.
Yeah.
That really hurts. When you miss a season and you're not able to play, especially when you're healthy, then, you know, he's going to take a little bit of time to get caught up and then be able to take that next step as a freshman.
Mm-hmm. We had a question from Rob on Facebook who said, with all the transfers coming in, what will National Signing Day look like? What kind of targets are positional needs?
There's a couple of big guys out there. I just put up highlights from Dave Aluli. I think that's it.
Aluli.
Yeah. One of the greatest kids in the 2022 class. He's from the state of Washington also, four-star offensive lineman. He was awesome at Polynesian Bowl practices. I put up some highlights of him. He's got USC in his top three with Oregon and Miami. So he had a real, he was committed to Oregon, and he likes Mario Cristobal a lot, who's now at Miami. So someone like that. We always mentioned Josh Connerly, who's the San Diego cornerback shotgun. Yeah. So there's some names out there. USC adds a couple, you know, potential five-star guy, a four-star guy or two. That helps with the class as well. I mean, you're going to get a bunch of transfers, but any more dudes you can add, there's still a few names out there.
Mm-hmm. We got a – sorry, go for it, Shadi.
Should mention Connerly is not going to be signing on National Signing Day. Yeah. He wants to take some visits, and he's going to have to wait till March to do that. So that one won't be something for USC, but – Aiuli is a guy that USC is definitely looking at and, you know, would like to be able to close the deal there. It's going to be tough with Miami and obviously the connection he has with Cristobal. But then Florence is down, announced today that he is down to his top two, which is USC and Oregon, where he was previously committed. So can the Trojans steal one from the Ducks there?
And for Dave, Josh Henson, the offensive line coach, was actually the first coach to offer him a scholarship when he was a freshman, but that was at Texas A&M.
We got a question from Mark Watkins who said, will Rajon Davis be given a real chance to win a starting linebacker spot? And this was something that was really interesting just to watch progress over 2021 because it seemed like the defensive coaches were really high on Davis and wanted him to get more playing time. And then we never really saw that take hold. What do you expect from him going forward?
I mean, he has to get given a real shot because there's not the bodies there anymore. So with the attrition that USC has had, I think that he's definitely in the mix, especially at the outside linebacker position. Now, where do they line him up? He can play inside. He can play outside. That's something to see again. That was something 2 years ago when Todd Orlando was, where's everybody line up? You know, once the defense, you get your players and you arrive at spring camp, the first day you're looking, all right, where is everybody lined up? What positions are they playing? You know, what defense are they actually starting out in the very first snap?
Mm-hmm. We had a question from Andrew who said, who are your top two returning starters on both sides?
Top two returning starters.
Andrew Voorhees on the offensive line is number one, and then probably Brett Nealon on the offensive line.
I think that's probably where you'd have to go because you wouldn't do running back, probably not receiver, definitely not receiver because
tight end.
Yeah, it's just like I think you have to go on the offensive line.
There's not a lot of returning starters on the offense, especially if Jackson Dart does not return to USC. So you're left with basically – you know, the offensive lineman, and then, you know, Taj Washington. That's about it. Maybe Garrett Bryant, you could throw him in there as well. You could include him as a starter. On the defensive side.
Thule, probably, right? Thule.
Thule and Nick Figueroa are guys you're looking at. But, you know, the safety position. Can Xavion Alford take another step in his game? That's a guy to watch. Kalen Bullock, where do you line him up? What do you play him at free? Do you play him at strong? Do you play him at nickel? Do you play him at cornerback? You can play him all over the place. He's a guy that I think is going to take another big jump, especially working in the weight room, going to be even stronger than he was last year. I think the kid's a star, and I think that he's a guy to definitely keep your eyes on going forward.
Yeah, it'll be really exciting to see him next year. We got a question from a different Andrew who said, what are some potential negatives to bringing in so many transfers?
Well, I mean, there's always chemistry in the locker room, right? That's one of the things. And sometimes it takes a little while. We saw, you know, it worked well at Michigan State. You know, they brought in a bunch of dudes in. Utah had a bunch of transfers. We've seen different programs do it. And sometimes it doesn't work. You know, there's square pegs, round holes kind of things going on. And so, especially when you're bringing guys in from all over the country. Now, it's a whole new staff, and I think everyone's sort of on the same page. It might be easier when you have a new staff. There's not an established culture that people have been there. We saw some sort of like California versus Texas thing when USC had a bunch of Texas coaches and transfers and things like that. Those sort of little clicks, I guess, that could go on the team. I feel like everyone's starting off with a clean slate, so maybe that helps. But certainly that's one of the disadvantages of bringing these guys in is you don't know as far as like what it's going to be like in the locker room. Are guys going to get along? Is it going to work system-wise, scheme-wise? And that's kind of where you have to trust the coaches to know. They know what they're going after. They're not just bringing in guys because they want to bring them in. I think when you're high school recruiting, there's a little bit more of a crapshoot. You've actually seen these guys play in college, so you hope the evaluations are a little bit better than what you would see from some of the high school guys.
We got a question.
Just like Ryan said, it's affecting the culture. But USC doesn't have a culture, and when you lose basically half the roster as well, it's not like there's some solidified identity on this USC team and, hey, these guys are going to come in and, you know, it's the new guys versus the old guys. Everyone's new to the coaching staff pretty much. So, you know, that's one of the things you worry about is favoritism. And, you know, I think that that's why there was more of an issue at Utah early in the season than at Michigan State, because again, that's a, you know, second year coaching staff. So there's not these established connections, guys that have been there 4 or 5 years together. And hey, now the coach is not playing me type of thing, even though I've been here for 5 years. And now you start seeing, you know, well, that's my buddy. And now I'm not happy. And you get that little bit of dissension. I think that's where you can have more issues with an established culture like Utah has versus one like Michigan State or one that USC has.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Justin said, what kind of impact can we legitimately expect from Malik Brown this year?
Playmaker. I mean, you know, I think they're going to find ways to get the ball in his hands. You know, he has that electricity about him. So that's a guy that I'm excited to see because I think he's the closest thing USC has had since Reggie Bush. Now, I'm not going to put that label on him or anything like that, but it's the closest for USC since at least Joe McKnight. So, you know, he's just electric when he gets the ball with his ability to make guys miss. We've seen other playmakers that do it in different ways. Ronald Jones with his one cut and just being able to turn on the Jets. But his ability to make people miss and then, you know, be able to go Malik Brown, I think is elite.
You see, like, the San Francisco 49ers, like a Deebo Samuel kind of guy. He's, like, running in the backfield. He's, like, in the like, maybe he could be someone like that. He's catching passes out of the slot. He's running the ball. I don't know. I mean, it'd be playmaker, like Jacquan said, so it'd be fun to see what he can do.
Mm-hmm. But a question from AKA Boone, who said, with the current roster, who are your ideal starting wide receivers?
Ooh.
That's a tough one. And I don't want to really answer this yet because I want to see Brendan Rice in practice. I want to see Mario Williams with my own eyes. You know, you can watch some game film, but you can't really compare to the guys that USC has had until you see them kind of side by side. So I think that was a kind of a tough answer there. You would look to those starters. You know, I think Mario Williams is the easy answer just because he's got a year of experience in Lincoln Riley's system. He's an elite playmaker himself. So you would think he's a guy that should be able to get in that mix. From there, do you use big bodies on the outside? Do you use all small guys? How are you using the tight end? Like, there's a lot of questions that yet to be answered, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Bynum's a, you know, six-year player, like you said. Is he coming in to not start? I mean, my guy Kyle Ford, he's got to be out there. I mean, there's some options. And will they rotate guys? Like, we heard Graham Harrell say they were going to play 10, 12 guys. Like, that never happened. Will they use that a little more in Lincoln Riley system? We'll see.
Ryan, I have dubbed you the Pac-12 guru.
Okay.
And we are going to your guru status now. We got a question about from Coley White. Wanted to know about Chip Kelly's extension, your thoughts. And I'm going to add on to it. Justin Wilcox as well got extended. Your thoughts for the conference.
Yeah, for Wilcox, I mean, the guy was like fighting COVID. He was fighting the city of Berkeley and the health department, all this kind of stuff. You know, Oregon was looking at him. He told them no. They needed to extend him. And, you know, they should have been bowl eligible this year. It just things, you know, didn't really work out. He got a big win against USC at the end of the year. But I think that's justified. He's fighting a lot of battles there. And I think he's doing a good job at Cal. We'll see if their offense can kind of take a step. For Chip Kelly, that's a tough situation. There's a lot of UCLA fans that are not happy that he was extended. You know, David Woods, who I do the podcast of Champions with, was not extremely happy. There was some thought that he could have taken an NFL job. The extension took a really long time. what were they doing? He ends up getting a 4-year deal. I was joking that they should give him a 10-year deal like a Mel Tucker or someone like that. But yeah, so I feel like for UCLA, certainly, you know, they took steps forward. They won their first out of conference game in the, you know, year four of Chip Kelly era. They had their first winning record going 8-4. DTR is coming back. So I think there's some optimism there. But, you know, is he really going to be the guy? Can they rely on transfers and not really recruit at the high level? Lincoln Riley's going to raise the bar as far as recruiting in Los Angeles. Chip Kelly wasn't doing a great job when he was going against Clay Helton when there was 4- and 5-star players for the pickings. And I think some of those choice guys, you know, they were going to Oregon and stuff before. Will they end up at USC? I think UCLA had some opportunities to kind of take some of those guys away, and they didn't really take advantage. What is he going to do now? I don't know if you can be as successful with only the OKGs, the R kind of guys. And I think that's what Chip Kelly's been trying to do. So I don't know. I think Chip Kelly's extension is probably a good thing for USC fans, I would say.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We got a question from Phil on Facebook who said, with all the skill player signings, everyone keeps asking about the big uglies. What do you think the strategy is for the big boys?
Get some more.
Yeah, but I think the strategy is much different when you have Andrew Voorhees and Brett Nealon return versus leaving. You know, if you have two starters or, you know, one starter and a half returning, then obviously you're going to be mining a lot deeper in the transfer portal for offensive linemen than, you know, when you have a 6-year guy coming back or 2 6-year guys coming back, a guy with Andrew Voorhees that could end up with like 3,500, 4,000 snaps in his career. So, you know, when you bring those two guys back, the need is not as imperative. And both Andrew Voorhees is one of the best graded guys in the Pac-12 last year, one of the top, you know, on the West Coast at least. And Brett Nealon was one of the top centers in the Pac-12. So I think you feel a lot more comfortable there. The other side, the defensive line, that's the question mark. And I think guys like Romello Height that they got today, he's an outside linebacker, but he's going to be pass rushing the majority of the time. He dropped into coverage, you know, probably less than 10% of the time this year. So very similar to what you saw from a Drake Jackson or a Corey Foreman about how much they drop into coverage. So I think that it's not as – I think they've been adding some bodies there. They just haven't got the big name 4- or 5-star guy that's really caught everybody's eye. But it's still about adding some depth there, and they'll still be trying to do that as well.
And you might have to wait.
Yeah, you remember the offensive line is always the toughest place to add bodies in the transfer portal.
Yeah. And there's still a couple guys, you know, high school guys that you could bring in too. So if you if you get a Josh Connerly, maybe you don't go and get somebody else. But if you don't, then you can bring someone out, you know, in after spring football potentially.
In that same vein, we got a question on YouTube who was wondering, they were wondering, going forward, will Lincoln Riley go for the portal as much as we're seeing during this offseason? Or is he going to rely on getting guys out of high school first?
I think it's a great question. I feel like it's going to be more of the high school guys for sure. I mean, just looking at the 2023 class coming up, I mean, there's 5-star guys in there. He's going to recruit at a very high level there. And the transfer portal is here to stay. It's going to be part of it. I just think this year one is going to be the biggest part of it. There's, you know, you're seeing guys leave Alabama, Georgia. They're having great success. Because if you build up a great roster, there's going to be 4- or 5-star guys that are third string, and they're just not going to, and they're going to end up somewhere else. USC's got a couple guys from Alabama already, so I think year one is going to be the bigger one, but it's always going to be part of it.
Yeah, I think Ryan is exactly right there. That this is out of necessity. You got to go in. You got to get guys, and they're getting them in different classes to fill holes. Whereas, and I think it's similar to how Andy Enfield has used the transfer portal, where you're getting 5-star, 4, and really high 4- and 5-star guys as freshmen, as high school guys to come in, but you're also supplementing that with the transfer portal. And that's what Lincoln Riley did at Oklahoma as well. Remember, he's brought in some – he's done a really good job of mining the transfer portal before other people have, getting some offensive lineman starters and getting some other guys to come in as well. So I think he'll cherry pick more in the future rather than it being out of necessity this season.
Yeah, he had a couple of Heisman winners out of the portal, so I think he's done a pretty good job there.
Also true. Heisman runner-up, I believe.
Yeah.
Jalen Hurts didn't win.
James on Facebook said, will USC ever return to the big pocket passing quarterbacks like Palmer under Lincoln Riley?
No.
It's kind of, the game has gone away from that a little bit, but Josh Allen's a huge pocket passer, but he can also run over dudes. He's a 6'5 guy that can run over people. So, you know, if you get a guy like that, then sure. but there's going to be mobility has just been it just adds that different element to the offense. And, you know, we've seen Lincoln Riley do it in two different ways. Baker Mayfield is not a dual threat quarterback in my mind. He can run and he can keep plays alive, but he's not a guy taking off all the time like Kyler Murray was. And you've seen Lincoln Riley use both of those guys in different ways.
Yeah.
We got a question from Young Solo on YouTube who said, with NIL, do players get last names on jerseys for USC going forward?
No, I don't think that's
it. It hasn't been talked about. Maybe that's something that USC looks at in the future just because that is an extra avenue and opportunity. But it's not something that USC fans, the traditionalists, would be happy about.
Do you risk changing that tradition, especially if – with NIL, the school isn't really involved in that money. I feel like money would be an incentive there, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to be identified as a player, but I think it wouldn't go as, I don't think the players would be as popular if they put the names on the jersey. And you want to be identifiable, and it's tough in football because you're wearing a mask. It's not like you're in basketball. Mm-hmm. But I think there's going to be, you're going to weigh it, right? And I think just stopping that tradition would probably have more harm than good overall. As far as there's things you could do in Los Angeles to make money with name, image, and likeness, but I don't know if the bang would be worth it. You know, you want to get the best bang for your buck. Adding the names on the back of the jersey, I think, would probably not, you know, the ratio wouldn't be great for the players and certainly for the school.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on how much it could help with the recruiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. We got a question from Tom on Facebook. He wanted to know what to expect from Miller Moss going forward.
Could see a touchdown pass in the game against Cal. You know, he found Katie Nixon and did some use there. I like his game. I like the way he was able to come in and play. We just didn't see a ton of him game wise, you know. So yeah, I think he's a good option. I mean, he's already got some experience, which is nice. You know, it depends how the quarterback room shakes out. He could be your starter in 2022. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm. We got a question about USC's kickers. Parker Lewis entered the transfer portal. Alex Stadhouse did as well, but then returned after Parker Lewis went into the portal. Shotgun, you are our special teams guru. What are you expecting from USC's place kickers?
How come we all have to be gurus or something?
You just do. I'm dubbing it to you guys.
I was critical of special teams, but Shotgun always counts how many people
he counts,
are on.
So yeah, which is guru. Good.
Yeah.
Surprising that you see Parker Lewis go into the transfer portal. I think that's been one of the biggest surprises of the group that has exited for USC. And I think that, yeah, that's why Alex Stadhouse came back, because he was looking to go somewhere else and get a scholarship as a, you know, as a walk-on guy. And maybe that we haven't got confirmation of it, but maybe that's what the you know, coaching staff said. Hey, come back. We need a kicker. We'll give you a scholarship now.
Yeah, and then Ben Griffith's going pro, which Shotgun, I think, broke that, or you saw that on the.
Yeah, I mean, he actually did not. He didn't know social media presence about it, but he's 30 years old, so it was just time for him to go, obviously. He's going to go give that an opportunity. He got married earlier during the season, so it's time for him to go and try to, you know, make some money from it. He's got an opportunity. We'll see, you know, if he gets signed with a team or whatnot. But his name was involved in the technically underclassmen that that were eligible for the draft, which is interesting, saying a 30-year-old is an underclassman. But that was the case for Ben Griffiths. You know, already had a nice 8-year career in the AFL, in the Australian Football, the Australian Rules League. And, you know, now he's got a chance to try to make it in the NFL.
The best part is that he was really lighthearted in the tweets, because you tagged him, Shotgun, and someone was like, isn't he 40? And he actually responded and was like, hey, man. He's like, I'm 30, mate. Spare me the 10 years. Yeah. And I thought that was a great response by him.
And if you look at the scholarship distribution chart over at uscfootball.com, we've seen over the years 5 players on scholarship a lot. There's one right
special
now.
Team.
Yeah, on special teams. There's one right now, Atticus Bertram, the incoming freshman punter. Now, maybe Alex Stadhouse is put on scholarship. We'll see if that's the case. But we've seen multiple kickers, long snappers. Like, there's been a lot of that. So there's not that. That's not the case right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, gentlemen. Shoddy, yeah. Are there any questions that I missed in this whole shindig?
Yeah, we've had a couple basketball questions.
Oh,
so
I was going to ask
minute.
You about that. Yeah.
Shout out to the basketball team. 16-2 now, the best start for any USC team through 18 games since 1973, 74, 70, 71. Paul Westfall team. I can't remember.
I was going to say, Paul Westfall, yeah.
They finished 24-2. RIP to Paul Westfall, who passed away last year, I believe. But yeah, the team is back to playing defense. You know, they had a four-game spurt where they're coming off an 18-day COVID pause. They barely got to practice at all. They just did not look like the same team, and they dropped from being a top-five team, dropped down to 16th after losing two games last week. Bounced back this week. Always difficult mountain trip where you go to Colorado, you're playing at elevation. You have to get on a plane again and go to Utah, playing at elevation. And that was two games in a part of a 3-5 stretch, their second one in 2 weeks, because USC will play their third game in 5 days tomorrow against Arizona State at 8 p.m. Arizona State, who was just reprimanded by the Pac-12 for bumping the referees after the game, I believe it was. So I think they're getting back to the flow of where they were before their COVID pause. Obviously, that had a big impact on them. And I think that this team can continue to get better as the season progresses, but it all starts on the defensive side, and we've seen that the last couple of games. They had gone, I think it was 13-0 before their COVID break. No team had shot over 40%. The next four games after the COVID break, they all shot over 40%, and that's why they lost two of those games. The last two games, back under 40%, so the defense is back where it needs to be. They'll continue to get better. And if Drew Peterson plays like he did yesterday against Utah, he was aggressive, and he made five. He was 5 for 5 on threes, super efficient, 9 for 10, 23 points. Then USC has a chance to do something special this year. I still think that this is a team that could be really, really good this year and do something unique for them, even after an Elite Eight run last year.
Mm-hmm. We got a lot of questions too, Shotgun. Why do you think they lost Oregon?
I think it was partially that you're playing three games in 5 days. They didn't have their legs back from the COVID pause, and they weren't playing defense. You know, you saw in the first half of that game, they just did not have the energy, didn't have, weren't moving and communicating on defense like they had done before, but it was a little bit lackadaisical. And I think that's partly they're just worn down by you come off an 18-day pause, literally no one's allowed to practice. Literally the entire team, every single player on the team tested positive for COVID.
So
they were all. Yeah. They were all in quarantine, so no one could practice. No one could do anything. When they finally got out of quarantine, they had the first practice. I believe they had six guys that could practice, and they were still waiting on a couple guys to come out of quarantine before they could have a full practice. And they were playing like a day later, so they just did not have they didn't have the opportunity to get back to their defensive principles. So they basically went 3 weeks without practicing at all. And I don't know if you guys have ever tried to do something that you haven't done in 3 weeks when you've been playing it for 2 or 3 months straight. A little bit rusty, and that I think that was part of it for USC, and then I think it wore down a little bit as that second week went along.
Yeah. I mean, we've been tripping over our words after a month off of tunnel vision, so I can only imagine.
I was at that game, and it's just one of those things where you could tell, like Oregon just came off an overtime win over UCLA. They came out shooting lights out. They were on fire and just kind of took the lead early. There wasn't, there's hardly any fans in the Galen Center because of the restrictions, and just seemed, the atmosphere wasn't great. It just wasn't working. You had one team that was on a high and another team that was trying to get back up there. I think USC now, like Shotgun said, they seem to be playing much better, but it just wasn't a great matchup. If they played them again this week, it might be a different story, but just the way it came out without the fans and everything, it just was kind of dead in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and USC has announced yesterday that they're, and if you guys checked out the war room, that there will be fans back in attendance. It will be at 50% capacity to begin with, and then they'll slowly try to work on that going forward. But I think that's a big boost for them because USC at Colorado and at Utah were able to play in front of 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 fans. So I think that's really a big difference, especially when you're lacking energy like they were against Oregon. Yeah. The fans, the student section, if they were there for USC, that can bring it up. We've talked with some players in the past about football practices when there's fans there and everything. Like, you can come out and just be like, oh, I've had a rough day, and suddenly if Pete Carroll era, if there's fans there, you're like, oh, I gotta perform, I gotta get back in it. And I think that was part of the thing that didn't help them in that game. There were some things that just didn't help them. They didn't play great, and there weren't any things to help out and pull them out of their funk that they were in.
Mm-hmm. Also, Ryan was there to cover the basketball game, which is just like, Ryan, how did you do that?
Yeah, like I think Ryan Carsey from the LA Times, like, are you lost? Like, what are you doing? Like, Adam Grossbart was like, hey, you need to show, like, I can show you where the media room is. Like, yeah, okay. I don't go to a lot of basketball games, but they were joking around with me. It was fun.
That's good. Yeah. I was checking the window, see the pigs were flying. So yeah. I was like, this is crazy. This is proud of you, Ryan.
That's why Keely left, you know, because she's like, whoa, 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 this ain't right. This ain't Ryan's right? at a basketball game.
Everything's upside down.
I don't think they want me back because they lost. So yeah.
Yeah, they rescind your credential. Shadi, I know there's always questions I miss. Anything you want to add in before we wrap it up?
Yeah, we got to wrap it up.
Nothing off the top of my head that I had signaled, except for a couple of questions about Solomon Tuliala-Pupu. You know, great to see him doing the workouts and stuff. But hey, is he going to play this year? How many snaps is he going to play? The man's got to practice for a week consecutive. And get some reps with the first and second team. He took that big step, was able to practice on a scout team, but need to get him in the rotation, and we'll see. And, you know, if he can, I look forward to seeing him play, because that's a guy who's been fighting through it for 3 or 4 years now, not being able to play. It'd be great to see him back out there making an impact.
Yep, for sure. All righty. Any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we wrap this one up?
Yes, for sure.
Okay. Okay,
it's
sir.
Keely Ewer is here right in front of me. So I'm really disappointed that this is going to be the last time we'll be doing this.
It's still so surreal. Haven't fully processed.
There's things you're going to miss. I mean, it's been great. You know, like we talked about earlier in the show, coming on, you know, as a freshman and just seeing what she was able to do, taking over, you know, really being a dynamic reporter, breaking news as of late, but just even in the early stages, she would take charge of things and took over. I used to do instant analysis, and like she took it over, and she would be our wrangler. Like she would keep me in line. Like, Ryan, you shouldn't say that. Like she's my moral compass or whatever you could say sometimes. She really helped with Dan Weber and just they, you know, I could send them off and do things. And, you know, she would go down and film. She'd go cover high school games, whatever we had asked Keely to do. She was always doing it and always great at it. And we appreciate that. I mean, I'm definitely going to miss the camaraderie. I'm going to miss her as part of the team. I love the team we were able to put together. And, you know, we'll keep doing it. We'll keep adding pieces as we go. But, you know, Keely's been a great one along the way. I'm going to miss the long hairs that are going to be on my chair after the thing.
I shed a lot, yeah. Or
the little pencil that she likes to chew on or whatever.
I just play with it.
The eraser's gone. Yeah. She just, you know,
yeah.
Like little... She would pick at the things. Like, there's just little Keely things, yes. You know, that are just be like, oh, there's not, you know, that's not going to be around. Or she'd write little things on the whiteboard about mm-hmm. shotgun or the stock mutual stuff.
You erased it, too.
I did erase. Yeah, you're a short timer now. I claimed the whole whiteboard.
Erased me from your life. Wow. Okay.
You guys were both not going to be here anymore. but it's, you know, it's, and shotgun's still here. He's around. He's just on the East Coast.
He's
now,
alive. So,
yeah.
On the East Coast.
And we'll talk about how the show is going to be structured. Going forward, we're still going to do tunnel vision, so we're going to, you know, we have to make some changes. Obviously, the intro and all that. So we kind of have this off season to sort of figure all that stuff out. But there's no replacing Keely Ewer. I just want to tell you, I'm very, very proud of you, and I'm very happy for all your success. You deserve it all, and you're going to be missed sorely. Yeah.
Thank you, Ryan. That's sure. So sad.
Yeah.
I mean, thank you guys. I remember being the young intern, scared to say anything on a podcast or anything like that. I remember the first podcast you brought me on was Harvey Hyde, and I was just like, yeah, okay, that sounds good, and didn't know what to say. But Shotgun, I have asked you so many questions. I have bombarded your multiple apartments to be like, teach me things, teach me film study. And so you've gladly taught me things. And so you guys have been great mentors and great just guys to be around for the last 7 years, which is crazy. Both of you have really watched me growing up for the past couple of years, so thank you so much, and I really appreciate it. So yeah, it's crazy.
This is bullshit.
Oh my goodness,
that's funny.
For anyone that doesn't know, because I have some people filling in that didn't catch the beginning. Keely, let them know where you're going.
Yeah, okay. So just for people who came late, I am leaving for USC Athletics. I'm going to be the team reporter and director of creative content. Basically, USC wants to create a better connection with USC fans. And so I'm going to kind of create content that will make them feel more connected to the players and the teams that they love, both behind and in front of the camera. And so interviews, podcasts, stuff like that. Just really fun content that I think fans will really enjoy. So I'm going to jump over and help them develop that strategy and that content.
Are you going to start tweeting fight on emojis too now?
Like, I want to stay true to myself. I don't want to like start torturing people as well. I don't know. No, like,
Keely's not going to be working
true at all. You definitely want to start torturing people. I know you.
Maybe you specifically. I'll be like at Shotgun Spratling and then torture you. That's all. But yes.
Awesome. Any thoughts, Shotgun?
You don't have to be nice to me. It's okay.
Yeah, I'll save some of those for the family, the final Family Feud podcast.
I know.
It's going to be sad not having Keely around, except, you know, we'll still see her around. So it won't be terrible for us, except for on the podcast and live shows, and not having her. We're cutting her out of the text chain. We're cutting her out of the intro.
I'm sad about that.
There's going to be a lot of cutting going on. I got to get my scissors out for this to get rid of this.
Snip, snip.
But snip, snip, you know, like my hair being gone, we're getting rid of Keely as well.
We did get a question if your neck is feeling extra cold in the Eastern coldness because you don't have your long locks anymore.
I went and visited a friend today. It's the first time that I've been outside in more than a week. It's the first time I've been off the porch of the house in more than a week. So
wow.
Are you just like hibernating?
You just stay inside, wear blankets. I've got 3 blankets over here to my left and down in the basement here where I work at night. So, you know, you just got to layer up. It's not fun, but I'm trying to stay warm. And, you know, Keely leaving does not help, you know, turning the cold shoulder, just throwing ice back at us.
Oh, wow. On that note, alrighty, that's going to wrap it up for tonight's episode. Thank you guys so much for watching. I called YouTube the Peanut Gallery. You guys were always so fun to interact with, Facebook as well. Thank you for making the show so fun. And be sure to keep watching and interact with these guys because they're great. But that's going to wrap it up for tonight's show. That's Shotgun. That's Ryan. I'm Keely. They'll see y'all next time. Bye.
End of an era.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching, these have been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii, Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.